Good evening, everybody. It's Dave Matthews here again with Personal Navigation. It's the 16th of May. Just want to say before we get started, if anybody wants to Skype in to Bob's backyard, they can. If you want to ask any questions anytime throughout the show, I can take questions. I'd be glad of anybody's input, you know, any successes, failures that anybody's had. Please call in, share it with us. Or if you can just add to the content of the show, we'd be glad to listen to that. So if you just want to call in the UK, the number is 0161 298 0298, and from outside the UK it's +44 61 298 0298. So we'll get started. I just want to say a few things that have happened the last week there in the press, sort of, and one of the reasons that I've started doing this show and started to go very, very public with, you know, helping people in court situations and helping people with, you know, any aspect of sort of becoming free of the tyranny of government. There was a lady, Stephanie Bottrell, actually chucked herself under a lorry the other day, unfortunately. Because she was struggling to cope with the bedroom tax, etc., that the latest sort of brainwave of our very friendly government. She was being hounded by the council and bailiffs and one thing and another, and just couldn't cope and simply threw herself under a lorry. And that's a very, very, very sad thing to hear. And, you know, obviously people like that, people I'm trying to help people not be in despair, and I'm trying to help people to sort of navigate their way out of problems they may have. And there was another guy who was in debt with one of the sort of payday loan companies, and he set himself on fire. And I mean, this is all over a little bit of money, you know, and that's the sort of thing that the greedy people run in this country are trying to get their hands on. They're trying to get it into the private pockets, and that's why I'm trying to help us get ourselves free from, really. I wanted to sort of start off then this week by talking a little bit about sort of equity, equitable title, you know, what ownership actually means with regards to the sort of, you know, properties, the DVLA. I want to talk a bit about insurance, and more a little bit about capacity again, and stuff like that, really. And I know I was on a call with Phil a little bit earlier, and we were discussing a few things with the DVLA, where they split legal title, you know, and sort of create a trust there where they call you the sort of, I think it's the registered keeper of the car. And I suppose I'll start on that, really, with the sort of car aspect. When you buy a car, you're sort of duty bound by these crazy legislations to register it. So you fill out your form. The form comes back, as you all know, on the form it says right in there that you're the registered keeper. Well, if you bought it with your own money, you own it. You're the owner. So why is it calling you the keeper? Well, it's kind of like a hidden contract, if you like, you could call it that. But you accept it by the fact that you're silent. So if somebody if you send away to sort of a company, just to simplify it a bit, and they write back and say, you know, well done, you're the registered keeper, and you just sort of agree and go along with it, well, you've only got yourself to blame. You should really sort of write that record, really. You should write back to them and say, hang on a minute, you've made a mistake here. I don't mind registering the vehicle with you, but you need to correct the mistake on your books. I'm not the registered keeper. I'm the registered owner. Here's a bill of sale, you know, and maybe start off by asking the DVLA if they write back a generic reply telling you about the Road Traffic Act and all that bullshit. Maybe write back to them and say, hang on a minute, if you're claiming you're the owner and I'm only the keeper, can I please see your bill of sale? Or can I see, you know, evidence that you paid for the vehicle and I didn't pay for the vehicle, if that's all you're claiming I am? It's a kind of a, it kind of creates a trust if you like, where they split the titles between yourself and them. So they put you in the position of a trustee. And then, of course, they can, if they're claiming that they're the owner, which is what they're doing, but with no valuable consideration, then they can attach conditions of use. One of those conditions of use would be insurance, MOT, such like, you know, and the sort of the knock-on effect of that is, you know, if you don't do what they say and you don't obey by their, you know, their rules and regulations, well, like they used to say on the advert, we have the legal authority or the legal right to crush your vehicle. So, you know, that's just a sort of an example of the sort of sneaky way that these invisible contracts are created. And I don't know if Phil would like to come in, or perhaps he's not. Perhaps he's not ready to speak yet. But we were talking about sort of earlier on some sort of remedies, and people sort of need to make the DVLA aware who they are. You know, like I say, you don't. The only rights, I say it time and time again on this show, the only rights you have are the rights that you are prepared to stand up and fight for. And if somebody is claiming that they have got the, you know, that they own something that you're spending your hard-earned cash or have spent your hard-earned cash to pay for, and then they're claiming that they're the owner and you're merely the keeper, and you just sort of stay very quiet about it and don't, you know, correct the record or, you know, write back to them and argue the toss with them, then, you know, you've really got only got yourself to blame, because it's your right. You own it. You know, you dictate the terms. You're the owner. You have a bill of sale for the vehicle, for example. That bill of sale is top trumps. A bill of sale is the, you know, the best document when it comes to things like that. So if the DVLA do not sort of correct their records, then they, you know, leave themselves open to sort of civil claims and such like. So, you know, don't be afraid. You're not gonna get yourself into trouble by not standing up for your rights and telling them who you are, you know, and what you are in relation to a vehicle, for example. And if anybody wants to sort of butt in at any stage or say anything, then just stick your hand up there in the chat box and we'll pull you in and say a bit about it. But we're in a sort of situation at the moment where cars are just getting taken off people. People are, you know, there are actors on YouTube that are sort of being filmed getting their cars taken off them. There's mass confusion, and they're going to try and demonstrate. They're going to employ people, you know, to show the stuff not working. Phil wants to just come in there a second. I don't know what you want to add there, Phil.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Well, I was just letting you know that I was in, but had my mic muted. Me Skype's a little bit flaky at the moment, but yeah, if you ever, you know, if you need me to jump in at some point, I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, I was just sort of saying for the listeners there, obviously you heard it about the equitable title, and we were talking earlier, you know, the sort of statement or catchphrase, equity is king, you know, and in the instance of, you know, I'm focusing a little bit on the car for the first bit here, you know, in the instance of that, you are the equitable title holder. If it's yours, you own it. And then they create this sort of invisible contract, which sort of puts you into like a position of a trustee. And it means they can attach all these terms and conditions, you know, MOT, insurance and such like. So I don't know if you've got anything to add, if you want to add anything into, yeah, you know, what I've been saying there, or if you wanted me just to pull you in a little bit later to speak, or
yeah, let's let it be organic. Yeah. The only thing I was going to say was I was a little bit late getting in. I connected about 7 minutes past eight, so I don't know if you covered the conditional acceptance stuff that we were talking about earlier regarding the DRA.
That's, that's a brilliant prompt. Yeah. Yeah, we were talking earlier on. I mean, there's sort of various thing, you know, various arguments and stuff where you're, you know, in honor, what, you know, you should really stay in honor. Therefore, if you sort of, if you just refuse to accept something, you're being dishonorable. If you, if for example, you just remain silent, you acquiesce, or you just give consent. So a very effective remedy, and it does certainly have a good effect, is you could conditionally accept to register, you know, a car or similar. You conditionally accept that the car is registered, but under the, you know, certain conditions. You could name your conditions. So, you know, that's another good remedy, and I want to cover a bit more about the conditional acceptance in a bit when I go on to sort of the property aspect of things, with which we'll cover, you know, council tax and such like, and then maybe also cover stuff like parking fines. Helped a guy this week, you know, with parking fines. But what I was going to go on to next, I don't know if you got anything to add there, Phil, for a second on the driving or the car stuff. I don't know if you want to add anything there for a second, or you.
Yeah, I was gonna. What I was gonna say was the knock-on effect of not registering it with regards to insurance, with their whole system being sort of intrinsically intertwined with all the other aspects. Like, you can't get an MOT if you've got no valid tax. You can't get tax if you've got no MOT or insurance and everything. I was thinking somebody using a deregistered car wouldn't be able to insure the car now, without going into the whole responsibility argument and aspect of the insurance. You can't act, as you were saying with the conditional acceptance, specifically what I was thinking there was, if you made one of your conditions that you wouldn't, that the DVLA wouldn't pass on your data to any third party, for instance, parking fine companies, private parking fine companies, I'm not talking even about the police or anything here. If you go on the DVLA website, there's all kinds of packages you can sign up to receive information. Now, all they need to do is be registered as a company, and anybody can sort of get pay DVLA, and they'll give the driver's details to them, which I think is quite shocking and well, not too friendly a practice.
I mean, you can certainly attach conditions with regards to that, and like you say, if they do breach any sort of conditions that you've put on, they do leave themselves open to, you know, to a civil claim. But people have got to follow it through. And just Sudama in the chat room there was just pointing out again that insurance doesn't cover killing somebody, and that's absolutely correct. I know a guy, he'll probably come onto the Skype call at some point tonight. The police asked him for if he was insured when he was driving a car, and he sort of said yes, I was insured, and he said, "Oh well, can I have your policy number?" So he started reciting his national insurance number to him. Okay, yeah. The policeman was absolutely furious. Okay, but he did not mention it again.
Right.
So that, what does that tell you? And you know where they start blurbing out stuff like, oh, if you killed somebody and you weren't insured. Well, no, that is correct, and that's completely correct, Saddam. Insurance does not cover you killing somebody. That comes from the unlimited liability through the national insurance number and places. It's, you know, and that's something that they're not going to tell you. They're not going to tell you that because they want you, you know, the propaganda on the telly. You see it time and time again. You know, years ago when they were bringing in the legislation of crushing cars, etc. You know, how many times did you see the belligerent policeman? You know, if you killed somebody, blah blah blah, you're very irresponsible. We're going to take your car off you. You know, and they've got people believing it. You know, to the extent where the people are probably clapping at home. You know, delighted this irresponsible person has just had their car taken off them. So, you know, that's another example of complete underhandedness. You know, by the powers that be. That's what they are. They're just under, you know, completely underhanded. I don't know if somebody's just joined us in the chat room there. I was just saying about the national insurance number and giving it to the police. I don't know if you want to come in on that or aren't you ready to speak yet? Matthew? No, he's not ready to speak yet.
Amy Clare was just added, I think.
I think that's Matthew. So, but he'll jump in when he wants to speak anyway, and then we won't shut him up.
Yeah, but, can I just clarify one? I wasn't actually saying about the conditional acceptance to kind of file lawsuits if they did sell on your data. It's more the fact that there's no way they're going to agree to that because they want everybody who's registered treated the same. So, but you know, my take on it, which I'm going to test at some point, is that they would refuse to accept those conditions. In other words, they're the ones then who are refusing to engage in the registration contract. You know, so they're the ones in dishonor basically, and then that has impacts onto the insurance. It's that, you know, I would get public liability insurance or insure it privately. However, I can't because it's not registered with the DVLA because the DVLA refused to let me register it, you know, when I made my conditional acceptance of the registration process. So, yeah, I mean, that might be some tool to maybe play with and investigate.
Yeah, correct. And also, if they wouldn't therefore register it or accept your condition, well, can the police then come along and steal it off you? You know, because I don't
My take on it would be no, because their whole, you know, they're destroying private property. Now, it's okay when it belongs to the DVLA, belongs in quotes, you know. But if they're doing it, and it's yours, and you've protested and told them that you don't consent to it being stolen, basically, then I don't see how anything other than a lawsuit for willful damage of public private property, you know.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that is a crime. And I mean, I just want to say for, you know, some of the listeners who may not be in the chat room there, like how it works in effect with the DVLA to... I don't know if people understand how a trust is created. You split equitable title and legal title. So basically that's how it works with the DVLA, although they twist the tables round on you and they claim to be the equitable title, or their documents are worded in a way whereby they are the equitable title holder and you're just the legal title holder. Therefore, they attach the conditions of use. There's so many sort of spins that you can put on it. But like you say, if you put them into a dishonorable situation and they can't register the car, therefore they can't use their clever paperwork or their hidden contracts with no valuable consideration. They can't use those against you. Therefore, if... a policeman did come along and take your car off you and crush it, then they would be committing theft. They would be committing criminal damage, etc., etc., etc. Exactly what you're saying. It is completely correct. So, you know, yeah, I think that's a very, very good remedy, the conditional acceptance. I just want to sort of – I'll use that quite a lot tonight during the show. And then
I like the way Rob Menard sums it up. So there's four things you can do when you're asked a contract, and bearing in mind first and foremost that all contracts have to be consensual, like they have to be agreed to by both parties. Now, if you were to just write in and say, "No, I'm not going to register my car," blah 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 blah, you are automatically in dishonor. You can say yes. In which case, you're bending to someone's will if you're accepting everything that they're telling you with no conditions of your own, which isn't good. You can flat out refuse, in which case you're in dishonor. You're the one that's then liable. You can do nothing, just ignore their request to register your vehicle, in which case you're tacitly accepting the contract. Or the fourth thing that everybody forgets about in this case is the conditional acceptance. And it's very simple. It's like, you know, when somebody offers you something in exchange for something else, you barter, you know, you say, okay, I'll accept that if you'll accept this, you know. And it's nothing new. It's been going on for millennia and that, you know, and it's just a different spin that me and a couple of neighbors were talking about with regards to the DVR. It's specifically after I'd been on their website and saw, go check it out for yourselves. I haven't got the website address, but you can Google DVLA, and there's reams of pages about who they will and won't sell the data onto, and a lot of them are, as is the case with most things these days, private companies that are just looking to make profit, you know, like supermarket parking cameras and all that kind of nonsense. But yeah, that's about it on all I've got on the car stuff at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, and with the parking notices and such, like, you know, again, they deliberately do things. There's a guy over in Bristol, I don't know if he's listening tonight, he may be, maybe not, but he'd sort of had a bit of a guts full of constant, you know, ways to extract money from us, and they've got a bus lane over there, and it used to be not, you couldn't use it between 7 and 9, and then they changed the time without giving public notice to 10 o'clock. Well, number one, they have to give public notice. If they're going to change something, they have to give proper notice that they're going to do it. They didn't. And he parked, you know, in this bus lane where you can park after the hours. And there's a camera pointing right at this particular spot. So he'd got like a £60 fine, and then he quibbled it. And they were like, well, now you owe us £90 and blah, blah, blah. So, like, a remedy that I thought of straight away, because he actually, unfortunately, he agreed that, you know, he said that they were the person that you know, they were after then, effectively, but because that would have been one of the conditions I would have placed on it. But I suggested something like sending them a conditional acceptance of the debt, because, you know, you all know, if you're listening, if you're involved in any of this stuff, the first thing they do now, right in the first letter that they write you, they threaten you with bailiffs, they threaten you with, you know, further action and such like. It really is, you know, fear-mongering and tyranny. And I said, well, why not write to them and say, look, I'll conditionally accept that I owe you this money, and go as far, you know, you could go to a notary public, or, you know, maybe open a special account that you could pay the money into, and they could access the money either from the account or from the notary public upon proof of claim. So you would do something like, you know, this is obviously at the top of the letter, a conditional acceptance notice. It seems that you believe I owe you money for whatever it was for this parking fine. I'm happy to place the money in an account or place the money with the notary public upon proof of claim, and the sort, you know, put your conditions of acceptance in there, you know, and points 1 to 4 or points 1 to 6, you know, and you could say if this is under a certain code or a certain act, have you got any facts or evidence to prove to me that act applies to me? And you could make another condition. Can you tell me the date and time it became applicable to me? Can you provide? What else? There's loads. I will trigger it. But Phil's just jumped in there a second. I will think of some more conditions of that. But Phil, yeah, go on.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Prajna was just saying in the chat room about the system is without honour and there is no contract if you're not invited to contracts and the terms are not expressed. I mean, I agree with that totally. As I was saying to you when we were speaking on the Skype earlier, though, the whole driving issue is a bit of a weird one for me because, like you say, if you have got a car and it is registered, that's something that they kind of blackmail you with, you know, that they do hang over you. And there's no question in my mind that when you do register it with the DVLA, that's when you enter into their whole thing. But something that I forgot about before was the whole thing about the driving license. Well, it's more about licenses in general. Basically, the whole thing about licenses, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty corrupt because licenses are only given for things that you can lawfully do, like run a bar, watch a TV, own a dog, you know, fish in a pond, you know, whatever. And it's at the point where you apply for the license that you are entering into these kind of silent contracts. Now, how this ties in with the DVLA stuff we were just talking about was maybe a conditional acceptance of a license. It's like, what are the hidden assumptions that they're making? Where am I going to be operating under this license at all times? Am I, you know, can I, all contracts, you've got to have sort of get out clauses and exit strategies. Am I free to abandon the license at any time? You know, that kind of stuff. Not being very succinct in the way I'm explaining this, but basically, a license is like for a lawful activity, and they're putting it on you that if you don't apply for this bit of paper, you cannot do this thing that is completely lawful. It's a little bit like the mafia. I say, you're running a restaurant. If you don't apply for this protection scheme, then, you know.
absolutely. But you don't. That's one of the sort of tricks. You don't need a license to do something that is an inherent right. It is a right, absolutely a right. And you, in applying for a license, then you turn that into a privilege. But you could also say, you know, you've got a car. If you've got, you know, if you drive, you've got a car. Well, you may have a car. Are you using it all the time?
No, of course not.
So what I would say then, just because you have a license, you might have a credit card, you might have a mobile phone, you might have a favorite pair of shoes. Just because you've got one, does it mean you're using it?
This is what I'm saying. Am I bound to the contract all the time? Am I operating under the license? All times. I did go off on a bit of a tangent there just about the whole validity of a license. In effect, it's blackmail money. You know, it's like, I will pay you for your permission to do this completely lawful thing.
Absolutely. You know? And that's why I'm so keen to sort of teach people the sort of tricks, really. They, from the moment you get a pull, you know, from the moment you're pulled over in a car or from the moment you get a parking fine, they are operating under presumptions and assumptions. They are presuming that you've got your license. Therefore, they're presuming you're using it. If you're using it, you therefore must be presumed you're performing a function of government. That's the sort of the first thing. Like, I do advise people, do not pick a fight with the police. Like I say, they employ deliberately stupid, ignorant people. Not so much stupid, ignorant, I think would be a better. They're ignorant of the law. I have actually presented a policeman with a book on administrative law written by two law professors, two Oxford law professors. The policeman said, oh, I don't care about the law. I don't care what it says in there. Well, how ignorant is that man? He's there to enforce the law, and he doesn't care. He's telling me right off the bat, I don't care about the law. Like, who are these people? Where do they find them? Do they go under stones and find them? Do they get them out of the sea? Where do they find these stupid people? Yeah, I don't. Yeah. What a statement for a law enforcement person to say. I don't care about the law. What?
Yeah. You know? I mean, this is the sad thing about today, isn't it? That the whole thing about constables and peacekeepers versus policy enforcement officers and revenue collection agents, you know, it is all about the money nowadays. Just a quick one, though. You mentioned the word presumptions there, and this is something that it was a bit of a sort of eureka moment for me lately, is that everything is based on presumptions. You know, courts make assumptions. And
absolutely.
A good way of defending is to actually, you know, engage in conversations. Ask them, you know, what are your presumptions? Maybe I can tell you if they're correct presumptions or incorrect presumptions, because, you know, then you're not in, again, not in dishonor, because yeah. you're seeking clarification, and everybody has a right to seek clarification, because otherwise you'd be operating in ignorance, and ignorance is no defense. So
correct, but you could also get right off the bat, I am rebutting every single presumption and assumption that you are making in this courtroom, and I am not prepared to waive any deficiencies in the case.
Yeah,
because that covers it. Doesn't they're not gonna they you know, for the most part, it's a great idea to ask them, and I think it's a sort of honourable way forward. But it, for the most part, these people they're not gonna tell you what they're presuming, because they would give the game up. But if you rebut every single thing that they're presuming and assuming, then you've covered all the bases. You're rebutting everything. Yeah. So if you put them in a court situation, you put them in that position, you put them where they have to now prove it up. So okay, you got a claim against me, fuckface. Come on, prove it up. What facts and evidence have you got? What facts and evidence have you got that I was using my license? What facts and evidence have you got that at the time of the complaint I was performing a function of government? I mean, that they're fundamental deficiencies in their case. They have no yeah. facts or evidence. There are none. If you bring one single fact into the courtroom, you win.
Yeah. I'm a computer programmer, so I'm quite into all my logic and everything. And one thing I realized as well was if you're coming from a, you know, from the heart, from a place of truth, and you're just asking questions and asking them what their presumptions are. I mean, well, sorry, another little tangent. When you're, it's all very well knowing this kind of stuff, but when you're in the moment and put on the spot, you can kind of get a bit tongue-tied with it all. And I think that thing, seeking clarification, just sort of pause and get them to answer the question. So what are you presuming, and what are you basing those presumptions on? It buys you a little bit of thinking time while they're answering that and dealing with it, if indeed they can, which is often not the case. Then while they're explaining that, it buys you some thinking time to sort of prepare your facts that you can prove. You know, I came up with a saying, truth needs no sustenance. You know, if somebody's lying or even just mistaken, then that will come to light very, very quickly, because it always needs sustenance, it always needs feeding, it always needs more incorrect statements to kind of fuel it. But if you're coming at them with the truth, you can kind of just sit back and relax and let the truth take care of itself, you know.
So, yeah, correct. That is correct. I mean, the only thing you've got to go with caution, and like you say, you should think before you speak. You know, it doesn't matter if it takes you a couple of minutes to think, but the court system, it says again, right in, you know, the administrative law books, it says right in there, the courts are armed with coercive powers. That is one of their tools. They can use coercion. They can use coercion. Like, a court system can use coercion. Like, what is that about? Is that, does that sound fair and just? Does that sound fair and just to anybody in this chat room? Does it sound fair and just to anybody that's listening?
I'd really like to know from whoever wrote that book, some examples of what those coercion techniques are, you know. It's just kind of on an exposure level, do you know what I mean?
Say it again. Sorry, I was just reading in the chat room there, so go on.
I was just saying I'd like to know from whoever wrote those books or anyone who's read them and knows, you know, what some specific examples of what these coercive techniques are, you know, that it speaks volumes.
So, somebody was just saying in the chat room there, I don't know, have I got any personal experience of what I'm talking about? And it's a transcript of some of the stuff that Dean Clifford says. Absolutely, it's not a transcript of what Dean Clifford says. This is based on trial and error from personal points of view. There is somebody in the chat room who has used it, and he used it only a couple of weeks ago and will use it again tomorrow. You know, this is why we're doing stuff like this, because people are coming into these statutory courts and they're I'm claiming common law jurisdiction. They're like laughing at you because you're so stupid claiming common law jurisdiction. It doesn't exist in their courtroom. You know, it's all about the person. And if I'm repeating some of Dean Clifford's stuff, then I'm glad, because he's the one that's getting it right. You know, that this is from personal experience. This happens to us in courtrooms. I've said that on the show. If you listen to the first show I did, I've given experiences of it happening. You know, the subject matter needs talking about, because there's not necessarily people listening to this show this evening that, you know a lot of this stuff. There might be new people into it. So I've got to cover a broad base, but the fact of the matter is, I don't know if Matthew would like to speak at all. Matthew, there's a guy in here that wants to know about personal experience. You were in court there a few weeks ago, I believe. You were in court and you were gonna go down for 5.5 weeks. Tell the people exactly what happened and how long you were in there.
Can you all hear me okay first?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Basically, go in, you know, and you sit around, watch a few cases, and they call you up. Just stand there. You know, just basically just stand there, and they try and get you behind their little their bar. And no, I'm fine by here, thanks. Can I just say a few things first? I'm here by way of special appearance. I'm a non-resident and a non-citizen of the UK. I don't consent to anything that you're doing, and I'm only here by threat and intimidation. They will then go on to ask my name. My name's Matt. I'm here to deal with this matter. Date of birth? That's irrelevant. What's your address? I don't wish to give you that. You know, that bit they don't like. So they go on and you just tell them you don't consent, and just ask them to make it a matter of court record or public record that I'm only here by intimidation and that I'm threatened. They then go on as well to say about, because I was there for probation. So anyway, we get into the conversation about probation. Well, I say to them that, that's involuntary servitude. Now, that one.
Don't forget what capacity you were there in.
Oh yes, I do apologise. and I told them also that I am there in the capacity of the authorised administrator, or the authorised representative of the name. And as soon as you say that, that blows everything out of the water. They just have nothing over you, and they just stay proceedings. They cannot continue. It just happens over and over again. They just cannot do nothing every time I go in.
Yeah, so thanks for bringing that in, Matt. And I'll just, I don't know if whoever asked that question about the Dean Clifford transcript, if that sort of answers your question, but you can come in now. I think you want to ask a question, do you?
No, that's me. I just typed.
I'll go on, yeah.
I just copied the Dean Clifford thing from chat for you.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's no problem at all.
I listened to the Dean Clifford, and I love his, his fuck you attitude, really. Who do these people think they are? So I kind of put it into practice. Now, I'd already had a little bit of a go with the bank. I bought some, it was for the server, actually, for the backup server. I'd spent £135 approximately with a local store, and then we bought it cash, and they still took the money on my card. Now, I reported this to my bank before the money was took, and they told me it would not be taken out of my account. Now, they did take it out of my account. That was an error on their part. The error was telling me it wouldn't and then taking it. And that error was to the value of £135. So I'm trying to get back my original banking error. And so far, they keep trying to put it off. It's nothing to do with us. Well, what isn't? And I let them do it. The secret is let them do it. Let them put you onto the visa department, and then convince the visa department you're not making a complaint and you haven't got anything wrong, and they'll pay you. They'll give you £15 just like magic. You ring up and you say, oh, it's been very difficult. They'll just give you £15. They don't care. They just dish it out. Seriously, this is Lloyds TSB. If you've got an account with them, please try it. Put it to the test. So anyway, this has gone on numerous times, and after listening to Dean and yourself, actually, Dave, in the show before, I started now. I won't tell them. They keep asking me the cost of my call. So now I say to them, I'm not giving you my cost. I'm a reseller. And they go, what? They go, what? I said, no, I'm not giving you the cost price. I said, when you go into Sainsbury's, you know, to buy shopping, you don't ask him how much it costs Mr. Sainsbury, you know, for his apples. So I'm not telling you. I'm a reseller. Well, how much is it? I said, well, the first 10 minutes are free. And after that, there's a minimum charge of £44.22. Now, I just made it up, right? I just made it up because I couldn't think of anything. It just came into my head. Oh, £44.22. Anyway, they accepted that. I was quite gobsmacked. They actually paid me £50 the first time I used it because the call carried on. Anyway, the second time, because I felt a bit guilty. I don't know why I felt guilty, but I did. I actually said to them, oh, well, there was three calls. There's three calls, but one would have been 11 minutes. And so I said to them, look, I won't charge you for the 11-minute call, but you've got to pay for the other two. And they did. Lo and behold, they did. But they now, because I've now told them that they can stay on as long as they want. They can stay on forever if they want, and they can ring Dark City Radio. But however, if they do ring me, then there's an initial charge of £36,000. Because I was thinking of Rick Simpson, you see, and how much it cost, that came into my head. And I thought, oh, just give me 36 grand. And they went, we're not paying you that much. I said, well, I don't mind negotiating. And that's how we got into negotiations, you see. They were negotiating down from £36,000. And then arguing with me, because I bumped it up to £38,000, and then she argued that I'd actually originally... And I mean, this is true. I'm not making this up. We recorded it all. The woman is haggling with me because I moved it back up to 38 from 36. £1,000 for ringing me up. So we eventually settled on 25 quid, which I thought was a massive bonus. And that, of course, is on top of the two payments of £44.22, which came to £113.44. Which they did pay into my bank account, I'm quite pleased to say, but failed to actually pay me the payment that they were supposed to have done. So they still haven't paid me the original charge for the banking debt, which cost me £135. A banking error, which cost me £135. They still haven't paid me that. Told me they will pay me, and that was Monday, last Monday, and they haven't paid me. So that's the third set of phone calls, and now totaling £213. And of course, they still told me I'm going to get me £135 back, plus my next phone call, and another 25 quid for my trouble. And I'm going to be very distressed this time as well. Apparently, you get more for distress, Dave, than your time.
Oh, absolutely. Being distressed is very, very expensive. And, you know, I think that you've been sort of keeping me informed in that as it's been going, and I know that to be factual. It's superb, and it's a brilliant example of how we've, you know, you're not prepared to sort of work for free. You're not prepared to have all these things done to you, and them just shrug their shoulders and go, "Oh well, tough luck."
I am, Dave. Oh, I am prepared to work for free. I actually been working at a loss now for months. I really have. And I got to a point where, hang on a minute, no, if you take that £135 out of my account, I'm going to go overdrawn. It's going to cost me money. It's been hard not to go overdrawn, Dave, what I've been through. It's been hard work. I just thought, fuck. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But you make a mistake. What do they do when you make a mistake?
Well, they charge me £20, man. That's why Oh, and by the way, if you do actually ring up Lloyds TSB, I have negotiated now that they'll start your payment off at £25. £20. Normally, they'll try and give you £10 straight away for your inconvenience. But if you mention Dark City Radio, they'll immediately give you £20. I've negotiated that with Lloyds TSB. And I've got
That's fantastic. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. I don't know, Bob, if the guy as well in the chat room, if you want to, the one that you copied and pasted, perhaps he should maybe ring in if he wants to sort of speak a bit more about some sort of personal experiences and maybe contribute a bit to the show as well. But yeah, back onto your thing. And I think Phil wanted to jump in as well, maybe add something to your experience there, Bob.
He's just saying actually the same guy that's pretty good, really. He really appreciates what Matthew's saying about the chat and appreciates hearing about his experience.
Oh, that's brilliant. But I mean, not being funny, I'd like him to, if he feels he can, like, definitely call in. And the only reason I go over a lot of the Dean Clifford method stuff is it's so successful, and it is the way to do things. You know, if you can get lost down rabbit holes, as you all know, you know, and there's a lot, so much misinformation out there. It is all to do with capacity. It's to do with knowing how to, you know, navigate your person or drive your person or use your person. That's why I keep banging on and repeating a lot of the stuff that he's been teaching. You know, I mean, I speak to Dean, you know, most days I communicate with him in one way or another. I don't know what's happened there. Something's happened on the Skype here.
It's just a...
Oh, yeah, we've got a call coming in. Shall I accept? Sorry. Yeah, I lost my train of thought there. But yeah,
excuse me. I think you've got a call. I think it's Russ.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Russ. How are you?
All right. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine, yeah. If you just... if you just want to stay in on the call, and then if you want to sort of jump in and ask a question or tell us about any of your experiences, just sort of press one into the box at the bottom, and we'll pull you into the call. But when you're not speaking, just mute out your microphone, if that's okay.
No clue what I'm doing, I'll do the microphone thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. What do you just want to come in?
Yeah, if you want to come in there, just sort of press one in the chat box. If you just call the chat box up, press one, and then you can ask a question or add and stuff like that. I know there's some stuff you want to add a bit later on, but I think Bob wants to come back in there a minute.
Yeah, okay, I'm muting now.
Okay, Bob, go on.
I know, I was just typing in the chat box and saying like this.
Oh, okay, sorry, Bob. Exactly,
and,
like that.
I can do, man, regarding and Phil, what I did want to say is it can take you hours, this, when you get onto the bank. Some of the phone, they're getting shorter now as they get to know me. They're getting shorter now. Of course, you want to spend as much time as you possibly can talking to the bank, so you want your phone call to be free. Or to cost you as little as possible. Of course, remember you're a reseller, and you're not going to reveal your cost, but you'll give them the charge of the call. They will accept this, or at least in my experience, they will. But
just
when you
for
get
people who don't get the reseller thing, Bob, do you want to just sort of give a bit more indication on that?
Well, it just kind of came to me. See, another thing is, right, it's not. I don't do the Dean Clifford method, right? I do the Bob have a go method.
But also, Bob, that is kind of his method, because it's speaking from the heart. It comes from within when you know who you are, or like that's part of it, I think, you know.
Well, maybe, man. But like I say, I was doing this before I knew of Dean Clifford. You know, in my own little goals. like I say, but the more information you get, and as Den has pointed out, from the more sources you get this information, the better it is. Because you've got to do it yourself, basically. And that's what I was getting to the time there. Although it does take a lot of time, and it can be quite... I mean, at one point, my friend was here, and I had to say, just hang on a minute, I had to go to the toilet. I was into the third hour now of negotiations, and that's how I see it now when I ring up the bank.
I think we've got a break coming up soon, haven't we, as well?
I think we've just gone over it, actually. But yeah, just quickly before we do, while I'm talking about time, waste as much time as you possibly can on the phone. You know, don't be there trying to rush it. Take your time, keep getting them to explain things to you. And you can spend, in my experience, the first 10 minutes of the free call that we were going to give them messing around with their stupid automated machine. I like to shout, when it asks me what I'm referring to, I like to shout, what it's regarding is lying, cheating, thieving scum. And then I answer to every other question, cheese. Unless it asks me if I want to speak to an operator, where I very clearly say no. And the system just keeps me. And then eventually it just passes me right out. I just get thrown out of the system to an operator. So yeah, take as much time as you can and have as much fun with it.
That's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So, and when we come back after the break, we'll call Phil in. Then I think Phil wanted to add something to that. So if you're happy to come in after the break as well into that part of the conversation, and then we'll move on to the some of the ownership aspects with regards to council tax, etc. So if you can count in the break or whatever, Bob. Hi everyone, it's Dave Matthews back again with Personal Navigation, and we were just talking with Bob with regards to some of the stuff he'd been doing with the banks and the charges that he was successfully receiving there. And I think Phil wanted to jump in and add something to that, so fire away, Phil.
I had about four things stored up. One was just to tell you that Den had said that he appreciated the story, which Bob's already covered. The other was to Bob about I posted a link for a Simon Spaniard video. The title of the video, if you go on YouTube and type "How to Make Corporations Pay You for Their Mistakes," that it's an absolutely great video. I think that. Bob's really undercharging there. you can get a lot more money out of them by the sound of it, from what Simon was saying.
Yeah, I know. Met Simon. He is very, very successful with his stuff. You know,
he's very good, isn't he? Yeah, I mean, it comes out as second nature to him, which is one of the things we were talking about, is this thing where you become sort of unconsciously competent at. Bringing stuff up, and I think you said earlier, Dave, the important thing is to not be intimidated by just having fun with it. Make it fun for yourself. One thing I've found that a lot of them that have come across this kind of thing before have got these little smart kind of questions that they fire at you that kind of, if you're not ready for it, can sort of shortcut the argument. And my favourite one is when they say, what makes you think you're so special? Which, you know, if you haven't got an answer to hand for it, what makes you think the rules don't apply to you? My stock answer to that is, it's not that I think that I'm special, it's that I know that everybody's special. And then you can kind of fire it back at them and say, you know, why is it that you don't think that you are special? You know, as anti-terrorist says, you know, the person in control is the one asking questions, and the one that's not is the one answering them. So you just kind of flip it back at them that way. I've got a couple of little stories. One's vehicle related and one's sort of a personal on the street, non-vehicle related thing. If you want any space fillers later on, that was all it was, really.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. We'll come back in a bit later on with that. I don't know if Russ wanted to share. He contacted me through Facebook page, and Russ wanted to share some of his sort of courtroom experiences. I don't know if you would like to speak yet, Russ, or if you do, just unmute your microphone and maybe tell us your story, and then I can sort of tell you, you know, maybe cast some light on how that went, you know, and maybe learn from it. So, and thanks for that, Phil. Anyway, that's very much appreciated, and we'll come back to your other bits and pieces in a bit. Russ, are you there? Can't hear Russ at the moment. So, yeah, I'll just carry on then a little bit. I just wanted to cover a little bit again with the ownership aspect. I just want to say a little, you know, another little story that happened actually this morning when I switched my phone on. I got a voicemail off a guy local to me, a guy called Lance. And a year ago, when I was talking to Lance about some of this stuff, he was petrified of any sort of official or any, you know, council tax bailiff or such like, absolutely petrified, and would just, you know, consent and try and make a deal with them and be struggling paying this and paying that. And wow, the turnaround in that guy in a year. I had a voicemail from him this morning asking to phone. So I phoned him up and he said, oh, you know, I can never get hold of you when I need you. And I was, you know, 7:30, my phone wasn't on, so sorry. And I said, anyway, what's the matter? And he said, well, you know, and I apologize for the swearing, this is exactly the conversation, how the conversation went. 7:30 this morning, a bailiff from Swift Bailiff Services, who I've had death threats off, knocked on his door, said, oh, we're here to remove goods. And Lance said, who the fuck are you? What are you on about? This is a guy that was scared of bailiffs a year ago. And I'm a bailiff. I'm here to remove goods. And he said, I don't know what you are. I don't know what you're on about. He said, you're not removing any of my goods. And the bailiff said, well, I'm going to, you know, what's your name? Who are you? And Lance turned around and said, look, I don't know who the fuck you are. I'm not obliged to tell you my name, and I'm not going to tell you my name. The best thing you can do is fuck off. The bailiff then replied, I'm going to call the police. I'm going to call the police. And he said, I'll call them for you. The same answer applies again. Fuck off. And then the bailiff used, you know, the scare tactic of, well, I'm going to call in the removal department. And Lance said, cool, call who you fucking like, just fuck off. Well, I can break into your house. He said, no, you can't, and you know you can't. Are we done now? And the bailiff just left and walked away. And that's a great sort of story about how, you know, somebody is, you know, I'm trying to educate people on how to fight tyranny and how to fight, you know, all the threats that we get on a daily basis. But wow, what a turnaround. I mean, he's not up to speed on any of the sort of law stuff, but because I told him a few of the things that bailiffs can do and can't do, and then I helped him, you know, in person one time with bailiffs, he has learned from that experience, and in turn now he can do it himself. But the knock-on effect of that is that he will speak to maybe 20 other people and tell them, and then slowly but surely the word sort of gets out. And in relation to that, then I was speaking to Phil earlier on a phone call, and when I first sort of entered into a lot of this stuff, I was playing around with the council tax and bits and pieces, and writing, you know, I must have written them sort of 20 letters, and they have to go through, I think, 5 or 6 various methods of attempt of giving you ways to pay or ways of making offers to you, you know, offering you benefit. And at one stage, and I think Matt, who's in the chat room, can vouch for this, he actually witnessed what I did. They sent me this form for council tax benefit through. So I would write fuck off on one page. I would write horse shit, bullshit, cow shit, more pointless horse shit. Just literally just to test, just to see what it would do. And I'd put it right back in the envelope. It was sent to me in, and, you know, it was off, it went, didn't hear anything from it. And they eventually do what they always do and take you to one of these sort of tribunals. But I'd fought this for quite a while. The most effective letter, which was what we were talking about earlier on, was the conditional acceptance notice. That seemed to prompt the legal department to start getting in, you know, involved. And that for me was certainly the most effective thing. But of course, they go into the sort of, it's not really even up to the level of a magistrate's court. It's even lower than that. It's a pathetic, it's a, like I said to somebody earlier on, Philo was telling, you might as well do handstands down the drive than turn up at a council tax court hearing, because in most cases they've already issued the liability order, and in a lot of cases, as I've said before on here, I've got one guy in Newport who had the liability order. The date on it was 3 days prior to the court date. So obviously, you know, there are a lot of discrepancies there. But the thing that actually trumped the council in the end and stopped them dead at that point of the conditional acceptance notice, incidentally, because I was ringing them on a daily basis. I mean, I was a thorn in their side, like really a thorn in their side. And I used to get, the woman from the council was in tears, literally the lawyer from the council was in tears on the phone to me, because she just couldn't answer any of the questions I was asking her. You know, and I was saying to the woman who was sort of sending out the letters, whose name was signed on the letters, I was saying, look, I've spoken to your legal team. You know, they seem very, very confident that this local finance act applies to me and is applicable to me, and they are absolutely certain of it. And, you know, when I was explaining it to her, I said, all I've asked them to do, and I actually made them an offer, I said, if you can cite the law, if you can sit down and cite the law that says that act is applicable to me, I will pay you double of what you're asking me to pay, and I'll pay it today. I said, I'll come up to the office, you tell me exactly how that is applicable to me, and I'll pay it. I'll pay twice the amount. And so the woman whose name was on the letters, I think Miss Horlick is her name, Claire Horlick, I think, from one of the local councils, she obviously couldn't see any sense as to why they wouldn't, you know, cite this law if they were so sure it was applicable to me. But any instance, they eventually said that I was not allowed to contact them by any means. I was not allowed to write to them. I was not allowed to email them. I was not allowed to telephone them. You know, they were like, I had no way I wasn't allowed to speak to them. I think Matt wanted to jump in there a second, and I'll pick up on that story again. Come in then, Matt.
I'm ready if you want, when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm I couldn't get the microphone off.
Go Matt first, and then we'll bring
just
Russell
to remind
in
you, Dave, tell him about your conditional acceptance, but with the apples. You've got to tell him that.
Oh, yeah, because and this is the more playful side of me that people want to hear. I did say to them that I no longer used money as a means of payment. I spend, you know, a few months at a time out foraging for food, but I did offer them all of the apples from my apple tree when it came to harvest season. So they did, but they didn't want apples, and I was very, very disappointed that they didn't want apples. Russ, could you mute your microphone back out for a...
Yeah.
Sorry, and I'll bring you back in a bit there, and you can tell your story. So anyway, I mean, that was quite early on, but they, you know, clearly apples wasn't a great payment for them. But the most effective thing, and it was certainly the thing that made them never write to me again, was it was a rare occasion where I actually asked Dean Clifford specifically. I said, look, I've done all of this, and they've just railroaded me. And he sort of came up with the remedy of asking them for their equitable claim to the property and their equitable claim to the land. And that brings us right back to, the equity is king. So they either sort of admit that you're actually classed as a tenant in possession, although you think you're the owner, you're in the sort of legal system's eyes, you're a tenant in possession. So asking those questions just made them go away and made them leave me alone, and I haven't heard from them since. So you could call that a success, I suppose. And it is classic. You know, the other thing is, just prior to me writing that, like I say, I was actually banned from contacting them in any way, shape or form. So how could I possibly, if I wasn't able to contact them, how could I possibly pay them in the first instance? So there we go. That's my little council tax story. And I know Russ was very keen. He contacted me through Facebook. He just wanted to sort of tell us some stories about him not standing in court and stuff like that. So I don't know if you're ready. Are you? Matt just added as well in the chat room. I actually signed that the letter when I offered them the apples. I actually signed the letter with a picture of a rabbit instead of a signature, but it was a rabbit mixed with a horse, which was very bizarre. And I even told them that some of their paperwork didn't have a court seal on it. And I drew a little picture of a sea lion with a little gavel in its hand. And I said this, and I pointed like a little bubble to the seal. And I said, this could be a court seal, but I'm not sure. So I was doing it in a kind of a jokey kind of a way, but there was quite a serious note to some of the things I was writing. But just have fun with it. Like when you're challenging these people, just always remember, no matter what you do, they are just people. It doesn't matter what capacity they are there in. They are just people. They're the same as you. They just have fun with it. Like, don't be afraid to turn it around on them and show them how stupid, how ridiculous some of their things are, you know, that they're claiming, or some of the ways that they're trying to coerce you. Don't be afraid to turn it around on them and let them know how freaking stupid they are, you know? So, Russ, are you there?
Yeah, and you're dead right about having fun. Once you get to a place where it does start to come from the heart and you don't just believe this stuff, you know it. It really can become a bundle of fun. And I look forward to the next time. I've had some massive success. Well, I consider massive successes. The reason I made contact was about the standing up and down thing. I've got a good story about that. It's a long story about how it happened, but the public order section 5, I've gone in, I've sat down, the managers have come in, told me to stand up, and I've just sat there. And I wanted to wait until they start foaming at the mouth before I respond. And he said, stand up a bit more assertively, and I just sat there. And then he screamed at me with a vein popping outside of his head, stand up. I picked that moment to say quite calmly and sort of nonchalantly, and it was a conditional acceptance based on, well, I'll tell you the words I said. I said, I'll be happy to stand up upon receipt of proof of claim that you have authority over me. And they basically got up and retired straight away. I made a few mistakes. It didn't go the way I wanted, but I had a full day in court. I wasted three coppers. There were three coppers, you know, present when I was arrested, and they were in the court all day, and we didn't even interview the first copper. We didn't even get to cross-examine him till after lunch. So I spent a lot of the morning arguing the toss with him about different points. But anyway, they came back in from, while they were out, I'd handed my birth certificate to the usher and said, give that to them. And he'd plonked it on the clerk's desk. Now, the clerk's gone out with the three magis, because basically they're the legal advisor. They're the people who know the beans. And they've come back in and sat down. I'm still remained seated. And he said, Mr. Rawlinson. So he tried to address me, and I said, there's no Mr. Rawlinson here. Mr. Rawlinson's on your desk. And the clerk's shocked, looked down, seen the birth certificate. And he's turned around and starts whispering to the magistrates. And I'm trying to pick out what he's, you know, different words of what he's saying. I did pick out right at the end the words for legal fiction. He finished with those words when he was talking to the magistrate. So the magistrate turned around and said, right, I'm happy to proceed on that basis. So I'd read up on Section 5. The maximum they could do to me was a £1,000 fine. I wasn't going to risk it. There wasn't any risk for me in going to jail or anything. I'd read up about contempt and what it was. When I walked in the door through the security, I handed the security what their limits were to their powers. So, you know, I'd printed it off and said, there you go, you're not going to touch me unless one of those things happen. So I've got it all squared away. I know where I am. I know where my limits are. I've set my own boundaries in the court so that I don't get any contempt. What I'd basically done was removed any presumption of their authority, and they treated me so differently to how you'd normally be treated how I was before I turned 40, I was, you know, sort of not very aware. But the day went very interestingly, and it led to some very funny moments. My favourite moment was when, in the afternoon, we did get the first copper into the witness box, the prosecution had you know, spoke to him, and I was invited to cross-examine the witness. And I said, yeah, I'll cross-examine the witness after I've been for a piss. And I've just turned around and walked straight out the court and gone to the toilet. And I've took the time, washed my hands and sort of dried them nice and properly. And probably about, I don't know, 6-7 minutes. And I've walked back in there and the cop is still in the witness box with his dick in his hand. So that was funny because, I mean, that's contempt. You know, unless I had removed their presumption of authority, that would have been, you know, contempt, or it would have gone fairly badly for me, I guess. And I had my say, my way. I strolled about the courtroom like I owned it. I got right up in the cop's face. I was saying, look at me when you're answering. This is a part I've got to look at them. I said, no, I'm asking the questions. You can look at me. Look me in the eye and tell me you weren't out of order. And it was a good day, but I think it was good to remove that presumption of authority. They looked like fish out of water in there. And I'd pretty much riled them up and took the mick out of them all day. I ended up with a conditional discharge. They had crown a fly for £300 it costs. And he made an order, or he started to make an order for me to pay £100 in costs. And I said, listen, if you try and take that out, I was on bone benefits at the time. If you try and take that out my benefits, I'm going to challenge it on the basis that the tariff of what the benefits pays for doesn't include any debt. And one of the magistrates, the end woman, she'd been touching all day, and she touched it and said, that's interesting. So I'm still arguing with them about the order. And in the end, the magistrate turned around and said, look, I've got to make this order. It's up to you whether you pay it or not. So I shrugged my shoulders, packed my books in my suitcase, turned around to walk out. I was through the door and the door was about to shut and I just heard the magistrate virtually shout, you're free to go. and I went home laughing. But I've had loads of great victories. And I was squatting at one point and I got the nickname, I'd get out because I broke no law, and I'd get back in the house. And in the end, they decided to nick me for burglary, and along with that came some criminal damage, resisting arrest and assault PC. So I'm in the court the next morning after a night in the cells, and I managed to get myself out of that using the duty solicitor as a joker between me and the Crown. And I'd obviously learned through Dean and other bits that you have to try and settle the matter before you get into court. So I'm trying to challenge the Crown. And I'd basically laid out the evidence as a normal person would, that I wasn't squatting. I wasn't burglarising the place, I was squatting. So I did it all sort of on the level. Sent the duty solicitor up there, the young lad, about 25. He'd come back down and said, well, they're not dropping the case. And that made me angry because I was telling the truth and they wouldn't drop it. And I just said, right, go and get them. I want you to say this. Prove your claim, I have to comply with legislation. It's 9 words. And because he was a young, inexperienced duty solicitor, he actually went upstairs and gave that challenge to the Crown. Now, he come back white as a sheet. I think he'd had strips ripped off him by the Crown. You can ask us that, this, that and the other. He come back down and said, they're not dropping it, but retell me what happened. So I gave him the first version of events. Again, and he went upstairs, and within a minute, he was back down, and he said they'd drop the charges. And what I attribute that to was, you know, that it was the legislation thing that got them, but they couldn't drop at that point. They can't be seen to lose on that basis, which is why no one ever wins in court with a Freeman argument, because the Crown pulled the case. You never get a not guilty, or you never win on Freeman argument. It sets a precedent, and then everybody will be at it.
So absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I've been telling people. They will never, ever create case law that'll sink their system. Just jumping in a second there, Russ, and that's brilliant. That, you know, it's superb to hear success stories. You know, and I like an example of that. Yeah, why he probably had stripes tore off him. The lawyer is, of course, they. In places like New York now, they're actually banned from people, you know, saying that they're making special appearance like that. They have a superseding oath, don't forget, to the bar, to the law society. So, you know, there, if for anybody who wanted a remedy that something has happened, say something's already happened in a court case, you know, a brilliant Dean Clifford, as it is done, so it shall be undone. Well, a brilliant remedy or a brilliant reason for appeal is a conflict of interest. If, for example, you're sort of becoming, you know, more familiar with using the person and how to use the person, for example, if you employed a lawyer during a case, a previous case where they, you know, fined you £1,000 for, I don't know, breathing the air or something like that, you know, one of those really good reasons, a good thing you could do is appeal on the grounds that there was a conflict of interest because the solicitor you employed didn't disclose to you that he had a superseding oath to the Law Society. So therefore, you know, that's a brilliant argument. It's just an ideal thing. And I don't know if, Phil, do you want to jump in a second? Hello, Phil.
Hi. I was kind of having a conversation with Bob and company. I did want to jump in, but Lee was before me, I think.
Sorry, I didn't see it properly in the chat box there. Go on, Lee. Yeah.
Yeah. No worries.
How are you,
yeah.
Leo?
How you doing? Just listening to Russ there, and great to hear how people are using the power of this. I just wanted to add about when he said the judges walked out and they left and the clerk followed them.
Oh yeah, be careful.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people don't understand what's actually going on there. People think they're abandoning court. They have to leave the court to change their capacity. And then return to the court again.
I was just going
to
come to that. They bring, when they leave and come back in, they bring a new form of law in. But if you go through, carry on with that, Lee. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So carry on with that. Go on.
Yeah, no, that's all I was going to say. It's just obviously if you were claiming that they've got no right over you, and then that made them walk out. The clerk went out to advise them on the legal side of things. They changed their capacity and came back in, and they have decided to go up the ladder of their capacity or go down and come to your level. And it sounds like they came down to your level because of the kind of wording and that they used, that you say they used.
Yeah, exactly. And you can actually, you can object to them leaving as well. You don't have to sort of, you can agree to them adjourning, but I believe I would have to check on this. I believe when they recess, that is when they can bring a different form of law in. They don't have to tell you what form of law they've brought in. It's not my total area of expertise, but yeah, you are totally correct, and I was going to say that there. So thanks for adding that in there.
With the thing about the recess, the words they used was retire. And I was in court yesterday, actually, and Dave, you might have read my status on Facebook about it, but it was a good day. I was only going to do a stat deck on some driving things. And
you're in court more than Matt, and he should get a B&B next to the court. But go on.
Well, I look forward to it now, and I've got some things that I want to start fighting back now. I've just had a grand off Greater Manchester Police. They've got to pay me that within, it was 14 days. But my take on the retirement thing is they don't know what to do. They sat there like fish out of water. I'm not disputing what Lee's saying, but I think it felt to me more like, shit, what do we do now? And they retire to go and discuss it. And I know from yesterday's encounter, what happened was I was there to fill out a statutory declaration. It's quite a simple process. I've got to sign it and show this to the JP. But I like having fun. I like to sticking it to the man. So when they said getting the witness box and because they wanted me to swear out the declaration rather than just be written, they wanted me to do it verbally first. I refused. I said, well, I'm not getting in the box, and I'm not doing a verbal declaration. I'll sign it here. And they're demanding that I do it. I said, right, I'll do it upon condition that you show me the legislation that says I have to, because I'd read the Magistrates Court Act 1918. I'd read Section 14. It doesn't mention about, you know, verbal swearing. It's just a declaration. So I thought I'd, you know, get up the nose a bit by refusing to comply. And at one point, yeah, and then I challenged the authority as a whole. I said, you know, I'm happy to, I can't remember, but I ended up challenging their authority to do anything at all, asked me to do anything at all. I said, right, we're retiring. They went out, the door closed, and I heard her kicking off in there. Basically, it's a court door. It's got to be made of some pretty solid wood, I reckon. And she lost the plot in there. I heard half of, you know, how dare he challenge my authority. She's proper lost it. And again, the legal advisor had gone in there with her. And I know that's a discussion about what the hell are we going to do with this kid. Because they just don't know. They just don't know how to handle someone, you know, who's going to challenge like that.
I just want to add to that there. That, do you want to just mute that a second there, Ross, because I'm getting feedback. But I just want to add to that there. The magistrates, for people that may be new to this, the magistrates, do they're not experts in law. They are just lay people. The acknowledged expert, or the acknowledged legal expert in the room, is the clerk. I always would make a point now of referring to the Crown as de facto Crown. But you know, when you do challenge these people's authorities, they are like children. They're like little 5-year-olds in a schoolyard banging their chest. All they want to do is demonstrate how much more authority they have over you. You know, and that's like, I mean, that's just a childish mindset. And I just want to sort of reiterate to people, they are just people. They're not above you. They, as long as you know who you are, how to sort of act, you can make arguments from the heart, like Russ is saying. It doesn't. There's no sort of magic statement, you know, that's just going to get you off the hook. You need to know what you're saying. You can't just go in and pluck statements from the sky. You need to know exactly what you're saying there. So I'll just let Russ carry on, but I just wanted to jump in there. If you unmute and come back in there, Russ, and I'm going to.
Yes, you're right. You do need to know it within your soul. And what I'm so much more relaxed about everything in my life since, you know, waking up to this. 2010 I studied, and the introduction to it all was, it's an illusion. And John Boy said, don't believe what I'm saying, go and research yourself. So I did. And I didn't understand everything that was going on in it. It's an illusion. I've been studying for about a year, and I thought, right, let's go back and watch that again. And I watched it again, and I understood everything that was going on about. Now, some of it's been proven to be a little bit, you know, not we're more knowledgeable 3 years later or 4 years later than you know, the movement as a whole has moved on from that. But it's a great introduction. But once you arrive there, and the moment of clarity came for me, really, when it was down to Dean Clifford and the Trust Law videos, and I just thought, yeah, that it rings true to me, that Trust Law bit about them switching it around on you. And that was really when I felt empowered. I really started to feel empowered then, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And now I'm using my own words. It's like those 9 words that got me out of burglary and prove your claim. I have to comply with legislation. I like keeping it short. I don't like to write letters. I don't like to swear out affidavits. Sod all that malarkey.
Yeah, I just want to say on the affidavit thing there, Russ, that you've got to mute out your microphone a sec there. But I just want to say on the affidavit thing that that particular court venue, I was discussing this with Phil earlier on, that the reason you go and swear out, you swear a statutory declaration in a magistrate's court is because an affidavit is a slightly different, that's for a slightly different venue. That's why when you swear something out, like you say, that's under the statutory venue, that's under that magistrate's venue. So, but carry on. Yeah,
I get that about the different jurisdictions. Basically, we've had this statutory law, and to get round their own law, and they've had to sort of justify it under the law. So it's all got to work in the same way, but it's an illusion under the law. It's the colour of law, isn't it? And I understand. The point I was trying to make. I don't like the paperwork creamery. When I went on to TPUC, there's a lot of claims of right, claims that no, that's not for me. You know, if it works for you and you want to do that way, then great. Me, I just want to be left alone. But if someone comes and tries to trespass upon, you know, my person and have a go at me through statutory law, and I mean, I'm a good lad, I'm no criminal, but that hasn't stopped me having police contact throughout my life. And now I'm not bothered. Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough at the end of the day, because I'll just pull the rug from under the carpet for these people every time, and there's nothing they can say to me that make me submit to their presumed authority. And I like to keep it, the less words I can say when I'm doing it, the better it sounds in court, because, and the less you speak, let them do the talking, and then just knock them down with a few words. It's awesome.
Fearless.
Correct. Yeah, definitely. And I was talking about this with Phil again earlier on. The viva voce, spoken word, is way more effective than the letter writing and such like. I mean, I've had a lot of fun with letter writing, and I have got a seriously mischievous nature with all of that stuff. You know, I think I was talking about the TV license letter I wrote, you know, last week. On the show last week, when they kept making demands that that I needed a license, and I think on the letter it said whatever you were watching, however you were watching it, you need a license. So I wrote, I said, well, you know, of an evening I like to watch my girlfriend doing a strip for me. Do I need a license to watch that? Sometimes I watch food cooking in the oven. Do I need a license to watch that? And I went on then, and I said, sometimes when I'm driving along the road, I might want to watch the road now and again. Do I need a license to watch that? You've just got to have fun. You've got to show these people how completely stupid the letters that they are writing to you are. Like, I mean, what a statement. Whatever you were watching, however you were watching it, you need a license. What an incredible statement, you know? It's just bullshit. I mean, just really enjoy yourself. Poke them with a stick. Write to them. Tell them how much you're going to charge them. You know, it's brilliant fun. And once you get to the stage, you know, with Russ and like with what Bob's doing, Matthew, he's having success. When you get to the stage where you're just not scared, and you do actually have a sort of a rough idea of what's going on and how comfortable you are in your skin in a court environment, it's so much fun, because they're so serious, they're taking it so seriously, and they want to demonstrate to you how powerful they are. And all you do by doing exactly like what Russ was saying, you know, you don't have to say a lot, you don't have to be an expert on anything, you know, from a sort of statute point of view. You don't need to stand there and argue statutes, or just a few words, and like you say, you will have them nearly crying. They will scream. They'll scream. You know, one of their tactics now is aggression, where they'll scream contempt of court at you. I mean, if a magistrate stands up and screams contempt of court, you know, at you, just by the fact you won't stand up for him, I mean, he's making a legal determination, surely, in practicing law from the bench, and is he qualified to do that? You know, ask yourselves that. So, I don't know if anybody else wants to contribute, but go on.
Yeah. Oh, go on.
Yeah, go on, Russ.
Okay. I've managed to avoid any accusations of contempt, and I'm careful to always word everything with the conditional exception. Listen, I'm happy to do that, but can you do? You know, can you prove your phone? Can you show me why I've got it? Whatever. I've done that for a long time now. It's almost natural. I'll be happy to, upon receipt, approve the claim, this, that, the other. I've done it with HMRC a couple of times. They sent me a bill for 10 grand. I closed the business in 2007, and I didn't do everything I should to close it down. Basically, they were sending me tax demand, tax, what's it called? The self-assessment. And I built up about 700 quid in fine. And I just phoned them up and I said, look, I'll be happy to pay it as long as you can prove that I'm not protected by the Bill of Rights, 1688 plus 89. And she was tapping away. She says, okay, I'm putting this on the record. And the phone call ended a couple of days later. They sent me a letter saying they're not pursuing it anymore. That's £700, thank you very much. Then about a month later, they sent me a demand for £10,000 or so, about £10,000. And my feelings on that was, well, I ran a business for 6 or 7 years. I was turning over £600,000 a year. I think I've paid enough tax, don't you? And so that was my attitude with it. But I wrote back to them and I said, I'll be happy to pay it as long as you can prove the claim that I have to pay it, basically. And you know, and I think I include the word flesh and blood man. And I've never heard anything since. Oh, they haven't given me no proof of claim, but I haven't given them £10,000 either. It's a stalemate. And that conditional acceptance is highly important because it stops them being able to put it into court. Because you have to, you know, apparently you have to try and fix your dispute before you go into court.
So it's agree with thine adversary, lest he draw you before the court.
Yeah, okay, that sounds fancy. I might use that. Yeah, exactly. I remember principles. I don't remember sort of words. I have to use my own because I don't remember words. I think I'm probably a bit dyslexic and ADHD. My mum reckoned when they brought that out. She says, that fits you, that does. But I certainly always have thought different and I've had an inherent sense of natural justice since about 3 or 4 years old. A hate of authority. Anybody who weren't my dad or my mum who tried it on with me, I hated it, and I've always hated it. I thought, where the hell do you get off? Who the hell are you? At the end of the day, I'm an overdeveloped monkey stuck on a rock floating through space. What the hell gives another monkey the right to tell me what to do?
I quite agree. It's surprising, Russ, that getting feedback again. Sorry, it's surprising that you know, for everybody I speak to, that's sort of at a stage where most of us are now. There, we all had the same sort of feelings as you know when we were younger. We all had that, you know, the same exactly what you're saying, where we questioned the why would people have authority, why is that bit of paper worth so much, you know, all of that, all of those. I think we naturally question authority, we naturally question the reason for it, and I think that is definitely a good thing. But it's very, very common in everybody within, you know, the sort of becoming awake and what have you at the moment. So yeah, but I think we got 10 minutes left now, so I don't know if anybody else wants to. That's brilliant of Russ to sort of share all his experiences, and Phil and Lee there and Bob. Would anybody else like to jump in at the moment? I don't know if there's any other things that Matthew can think of that are funny that I've forgotten, but anybody else want to speak for a minute? Or are there any questions, or if anybody wants to... Oh, Phil's got a quick one, go on.
Yeah, it was just a quick thanks for the phone call before, really, Matthew. Dave, I mean, sorry. And to sort of reiterate what you were saying, it's good to have fun with it. Another good one to use in the court, if they're saying, you know, if you're kind of defending yourself and you're asked if you're a, you know, trained barrister or member of the bar or whatever, my stock answer for most of that is no, but don't let the fact that I'm not tied to your rules, you know, put you off anyway, you know, because you don't work for, we kind of touched on this, you know, that they're not bound by McDonald's rules and I'm not bound by the rules of the law society, you know, I'm just there to kind of speak my truth, you know, so it's just having little comebacks for things that they usually shut you up with if you're not expecting it. But like you say, yeah, just have fun with it. And it having fun with it takes away the fear, you know. It's and in my experience, when I've been dealing with coppers, a lot of them enjoy it, you know. It kind of breaks their day up, a bit of humour or whatever. And at the end of the day, they are human too. They don't all want conflict, and we do need them on our side, you know, acting in their correct capacity. But, yeah, that was... I did have a couple of stories, but maybe we could cover them, you know, do another similar show at some point, you know, on similar topics or whatever. But yeah, thanks.
No, that's brilliant. I'd love you to definitely, you know, thanks for all your input, and I really enjoyed talking to you before the show there. It's always interesting, you know. Sort of,
great. Thank you.
We all sort of learn from talking to each other, I think. And I just wanted to just cover briefly there. I mentioned a Guy Taylor. He's a guy from Hereford. He's not got a driving license. He's never had one. The police in Hereford now completely and utterly leave him alone. Just before I say about Guy there, Matt, did you want to just jump in and say anything for a second? Go on.
Lee jumped in before me. I don't know if he wants to say anything quickly before I do.
Yeah, I just wanted to add just a quick, if anybody is going through some sort of legal issue and they're thinking about doing this, one corner not to cut is if they're charging you under a certain legislation and things, take the time to read what section they've charged you with or whatever, and read what follows it, because a lot of times sections later, it annullates in certain situations the above sections. So take the time to read it so you can play that, you can bat their own ball back at them whenever needed, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with educating yourself. You've got to be I would be a little bit careful about arguing statutes, but as long as you've got it down, you know, the capacity that you're there in and who you are when you walk into the room, and the fact that you're there by way of special appearance, yeah, definitely to arm yourself with as much info as you possibly can is a good thing. So, yeah, thanks for pointing that out there, Lee. That's a good idea. So go on then, Matt, as well.
Just jumping back to something I missed at the beginning of the show. You were saying about the national insurance number. I've told you, Dave, about this experience before. I was pulled over. I don't have a license. I don't have MOT insurance, tax. I don't bother with any of that. Got pulled over. The officer didn't question anything about the license, the tax, or the MOT. Just wanted to question the insurance. The insurance didn't. Well, the vehicle flashed up with no insurance. So, yeah, I got insurance. I got my policy number if you want it. Okay. I gave him my policy number. Well, my policy number is my national insurance number, and they accepted it, and that was it. You know, I just thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, that was great. I let the listeners know that as well at the start of the show, and it's it's pretty funny that type of stuff. It really is, and it's it just goes to show that there are some people, some police do know some stuff, but you know, don't, whatever you're doing, have fun with it. And I know where Matt's going to court tomorrow, so I think that's at Cwmbran at some point. If anybody wants to come and have a look, it'll definitely be good fun. And I promise, Matthew, I won't dress up as General Goodshafting. So, I don't know if anybody else wants to sort of... I was just talking earlier on about Guy Taylor there, and I've only got 4 minutes, so I'll have to keep it brief. But he's never had a driving licence, and he was pulled over in a Nissan Skyline in Hereford, PC Hargreaves, and he didn't have any plates on the car. It was a Japanese import, and he sort of said, "Oh well, you know, it hasn't got any insurance, hasn't got any tax, hasn't got any MOT." And Guy Taylor said, "Yeah." Well, he said, "What the fuck do I want that for?" And the policeman sort of looked at him, and he fell on the floor, you know. And he said, "Well, you're driving." And Guy Taylor turned around and he said, well, can you define driving? What do you mean I'm driving? And he said, "Well, you've got steering wheels and a pedal and pedals." He said, "You're driving." And Guy Taylor turned around and said, "I could have Mickey Mouse and Donald fucking Duck between my feet." He said, "Does that mean I'm in Disneyland?" But anyway, they sort of dragged him off and brought him into the police station. He actually ended up, when he was in the police station, telling them exactly how much he was going to charge him. And I mean, Guy is he's a very, very good legal mind, and he's very, very funny. Guy Taylor is a very funny guy. Look him up. But he actually wound up filing a civil claim against PC Hargreaves, and he actually got him into court. He would have won the case, and he actually withdrew against him. He said, "Look, you're a family man. I'm gonna pull the claim," because this PC Hargreaves was nearly crying when he got him into court. So, but it sort of taught PC Hargreaves of Hereford Police a very important lesson in, you know, in law. So now, as a result of that, the police leave Guy Taylor alone and they don't go anywhere near him. He doesn't have a license. They know he doesn't. And he's quite happily driving around. He's doing a lot of sort of stuff. He's very, very big in the movement. So I just wanted to sort of get that bit in. And we're nearly out of time tonight. So I just want to sort of take this chance again to thank every single, you know, person that's come on or come into the chat room and contributed. It has been absolutely brilliant fun tonight. I hope my sort of more mischievous side has come out a bit more as well. And I do plan to tell some more funny stories next week. And it's been an absolute pleasure once again to be on this show. So thanks very much.